up, had to tell me up. We popping jack cause we expected to. And it's a beat that I'ma be resurrected to. Every leaf we deserve, every star it'll burst. Maybe y'all is the curse, soon to die from the birth. But yo, I'm celebrating with what I got. And ain't no time for me to chase it after what I'm not. I be reincarnated, God made it, I made it. Countless the stars and balls that I done migrated. Laws I violated, but more for my lady. On my favorite planet, they don't talk, they vibrated. Wind teaching you bird brain, seeking truth, her name, hurricane. Earth will never be the same. Man had a shot, co-created a disturbing game. Take your pick, ground, earthquake, or maybe burning flame. More fire on my funeral pyre. I'ma do what I done till the day I expire. As for you and your cuz, you can hate or admire. Cause I know one thing nothing but lovers of a messiah. Holy Jesus, I broke the gate loose and snuck into heaven with a bottle of Grey Goose. So come sip from the waters of death and reflect on the life and times of D-Clef. Every dog has a day, every king loses crown, every lion loses pride, every up has a down. We probably die cause we expected to. And it's a beat that I'ma be resurrected to. Every leaf we deserve, every star it'll burst. Maybe y'all is the curse, soon to die from the birth. But yo, I'm celebrating with what I got. And ain't no time for me to chase it after what I'm not.
Don't let this ride out.
People, this is the Gift of Gab, Blackalicious, Quantum Projects, cooling out on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, on your dial, or check it out online at freakradio.org.
We've got a caller. Sure. Caller, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, I just wanted to be really clear to everybody that Free Radio Santa Cruz is broadcasting at 101.1 FM in the downtown Santa Cruz area.
Thank you for being... Thank you. Thank you for your clarity.
Okay, thank you.
You're listening to Small World Radio. This is Mahia Soul.
It's a small world. It's a small world.
We can walk our talk, live in a way that sustains our planet.
Sun Thunder and I spent the day at Reading Earth Day. Here's what happened.
My name is Sam Williams.
Okay, Sam. Do you think our generation is in danger from the environmental crises going on in our planet?
I think that our way of life that we've become accustomed to as a society is not sustainable anymore, and I think that people are resistant to changing their way of life and giving up their comforts. But I think that we've come to a crisis where we will need to find a new way to live that is sustainable, and I think that as things get worse, that'll become more and more important, and it will bring more and more people to the movement.
What do you think the biggest problem is in the environment?
I think the biggest problem that we have is that our society is ruled by money more than good decisions. And I think that we allow corporations to base their decisions on trying to create more profit for their shareholders, when really we need to be looking at the bigger picture.
And what can we do to help?
I think that we need to work with our form of government to create regulations and good social policy that protect our future and our natural resources. I think that our government is interesting. I think that we have a very polarized population that is often against each other. But as I said, I think that as the environmental problems that we have become more prominent, people will come together and make better decisions.
what do you think about geoengineering?
Geoengineering, like
manipulating the weather.
I think that geoengineering is dangerous because I don't know that we really have a sufficient scientific basis to engage in such practices safely without looking, without knowing the long-term effects.
Geoengineering is the artificial modification of our Earth's climate systems to mitigate global warming.
Surface waters in Northern California and many regions of our nation are testing alarmingly high in aluminum, barium, and many other dangerous contaminants.
Are we being exposed to danger?
Yes, you are being exposed to hundreds and even thousands of times higher than safe levels.
Is it the clouds from the airplanes?
Yes, our generation never had clouds that came from airplanes. Yours does. But those are not clouds. Jet trails now remain in the sky for up to an entire day, spreading out and raining reflective particles like aluminum that disrupt our planet's weather patterns.
We may also be suffering undue drought and vegetation losses, Alzheimer's and other neurological and respiratory distress.
What can we do? Please, please.
Please, investigate for yourself. Geoengineeringwatch.org.
My name's Earl Bluer.
Do you think our generation is in danger of environmental problems on the Earth?
Yes, yes, I really do. Your generation and my generation.
What about our grandchildren? My grandchildren.
You have grandchildren. I hope it makes it through that long.
What do you think is the main problem on the Earth so far?
I think that we're not being very good stewards of the land. We're putting all sorts of synthetic chemicals in the land where we don't really need to use synthetic chemicals. We got to make more use of the natural chemicals and then let the earth manage itself rather than having the powers in Washington mismanage the environment.
I respect the secrets and magic of nature. That's why it makes me so angry when I see these things that are happening, you know. That every second I hear the size of a football field is torn down in the Amazon. I mean, that kind of stuff really bothers me. That's why I write these kind of songs, you know, and give some sense of awareness and awakening and hope to people. I love the planet. Changing of leaves. I love it. I respect those kind of things.
What about sunrise? What about rain? What about all the things that you said we were to gain? What about killing fields? Is there a said is yours and mine? Did you ever start to notice all the love you showed before? Did you ever stop to notice this crying, nervous, moving shore?
Notice this crying earth, this weeping shore. And welcome to Bathrob Spears Broadsides. That was a great song, but unfortunately it's not clear who is singing it. I'm trying to kind of look over the data on the file, and I'm not finding much to go on, but it certainly had a nice sound to it. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse, and of course this is Bathrob Spears Broadsides, back after a week away. Although, I guess last week the show was covered by Troublesome Thomas Levitt, who he actually did a brief interview with me during his show and then put on an older show, which hopefully was helpful. Having trouble finding the server here. I hope we're going out. Let's take a listen. Well, it seems like there seems to be a problem in the studio. I'm going to play a little more music, and I will be back. Don't go away. We have two guests scheduled to be coming up. One is Ed Fry, who will be coming on at 6:15 in about 10 minutes, and the other is Cheyenne Alahi, attorney from Orlando, Florida. So stay tuned. I think we actually do have a stream, although I'm having some problems with the computer in the studio, which is a bummer, but I'm going to work on that. Ed Fry, as many of you regular listeners know, and actually some of you Sentinel newspaper readers know, those of you who sell your minds with that particular publication, Ed Fry is an attorney who was a mainstay and inspirer of a protest last year called Peace Camp 2010, which is kind of having a, I guess in a way, a brief reprise this evening, starting at 7 o'clock in front of the City Hall down on 809 Center Street, for those of you who don't know where that is, across from the main library. There's going to be a demonstration, probably a small one. I'm not sure. I've been out of town, so I'm not quite sure how much organizing has been done around this. I'm going to be there to check things out, and I know that our number of Huff members are going to be there, too. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, for all you newcomers. The issue is Orlando Food Not Bombs and the arrests that are happening there. In fact, that's continuing to be a subject of concern for me, even though that's 3,000 miles away in Florida. The same thing happened here in Santa Cruz and up north in San Francisco with the same group, although that was 20 years ago, more or less, when that happened. And we were able, through sustained civil disobedience and actually sustained direct action, we weren't trying to violate laws, we were just trying to feed poor people and to put forward the message that poor people had to be visible to show the community that politicians were not keeping their promises, that priorities of the country were badly skewered, not to mention the city were badly skewered, and that there was a serious problem with homelessness and hunger that was not being addressed because of that skewed priority. More money for the cops, more money for merchant business improvement districts, more money for real estate developers, more money for chambers of commerce, less money for social services, more money for bombs, in other words, metaphorically, in a local level, police, parks and rec, security, first alarm, etc. Less money for dealing with real issues that are really at the core of concerns outside, for people who are outside, such as housing and jobs. Anyway, Food Not Bombs, as those of you who know, have been following the show know, and following the papers know, following the internet, Orlando Food Not Bombs have been under attack by the Orlando City authorities for, well, for 4 years, but most recently, very intensely in the last month, Two people were arrested yesterday. Again, I'm told by an email from attorney Cheyenne Elahi, who is a attorney who's filed an injunction in Orlando to stop the arrests of Food Not Bombs, specifically actually to stop them from trespassing Food Not Bombs, what they call trespassing. They have a cute little version of the Santa Cruz Ordinance, which some of us are going to be facing tonight at City Hall. Previously, you had thought you could go to your center of government, which in cities is the City Hall, and hold up a political sign, however useless that might seem. That was still your right. Petition the government for a redress of grievances, as the First Amendment puts it, without being arrested for doing so. But now, if you do that after 10 o'clock at night on the City Hall grounds, you will be ticketed, and if you don't leave, arrested. That's what happened to numerous people who were part of the Peace Camp 2010. In fact, that was the reason that the law was instituted, because I guess the city got embarrassed ticketing people for violating the camping ordinance when they had no legal place for people to sleep at night, and shelters were full, waiting lists were long. It was just simply a sort of a joke, but a joke that they didn't want to admit because it would deny the police their power to harass, interrogate, investigate homeless people at will, which is what they can do when they are enforced under the sleeping ban. So instead of the sleeping ban, they closed down the areas where homeless people were protesting, in front of the library, at the park. They declared at the City Hall grounds, they declared these parks. And they weren't, of course, parks. They are public building areas. I mean, they have some greenery in them, and thank God for that. But never before, to my knowledge, in the decades I've been here, as the mayor, at that time it was Mayor Rotkin, but Mayor Coonerty continues this policy in concert with other high-level bureaucrats like Police Chief Kevin Vogel, Danette Shoemaker of the Parks and Rec Department, City Manager Martine Bernal, just unilaterally ruled that they were going to close off these areas at night and make it illegal for anyone, for any purpose, to be there unless they were an employee cleaning the grounds. They amassed no evidence of any damage to the property, no evidence of massive illegal activity happening other than sleeping, which is, because it's illegal, the police have the option to go in and ticket. And indeed, all the charges against Gary Johnson, as I understand it, were dismissed in the interest of justice just this last week. He had many tickets for being on City Hall property at night, obstructing the sidewalk, sleeping, covering up with blankets. All these tickets were dismissed, perhaps because Gary might be using a necessity defense, perhaps because they've already got him on a six-month jail sentence, though he is out on appeal, on bail on appeal. If that appeal fails, which I think is likely to fail, he will be returned to jail for 6 months, as will Ed Fry. And Ed's going to be should be calling in shortly on Free Radio's voicemail line, and we'll be talking with him about his jail experiences. He and Gary were in there for 2 weeks, and they can perhaps give us some the inside view of the accommodations for homeless people who choose to protest. I don't think that authorities want to jail homeless people. It's too expensive, actually. But if homeless people begin demonstrating in a politically high-profile way, they're certainly happy to do that in order to maintain their existing set of repressive laws. That seems to be quite clear from the procedures and practices used against Peace Camp 2010, and that are still coming forth. Linda LeMaster, homeless activist, head of the Homeless Issues Task Force a decade ago, also chair of the city's Commissioner for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, a longtime respected activist, city council candidate in 1992, is facing so-called lodging charges that are coming up in July and being defended by attorney Jonathan Gettleman. So we'll be hearing more about that. I don't think Linda herself necessarily will be calling in or coming in tonight, but I know that Jonathan is going to mount, I think, a significant defense of Linda, and with all the publicity, although there hasn't been much recent publicity around Ed Fry and Gary Johnson's case, although there was massive publicity, and a tip of the hat to curb hugger Chris Doyen for his good work in that regard last summer. I don't know if the city wants to have another dog and pony show with the Peace Camp 2010 Penal Code 647E, the Thou Shalt Not Lodge, and according to High Justice John Gallagher of Department 2, that means Thou Shalt Not Sleep. And we'll see if that actually comes to pass. But tonight, as I said, at 7 o'clock, if you want some food from India Joe Schultz, he's going to be over there in front of City Hall serving food, probably some of his tasty vegan soup. And this is being done in solidarity with Orlando Food Not Bombs, which now has, I think, at least 25 people arrested, all of them bailed out except for Keith McHenry, who came back to set up a political table and was instantly arrested for allegedly trespassing on the City Hall grounds. We'll be hearing more about that at 6:30, if and when Cheyenne Alahi calls in. I suspect that's likely to happen. I talked to him this morning, and he's emailed me this afternoon, so that's pretty likely, assuming our equipment works. And I am having a little trouble with the finding the website, but let's see how we're going to do that. By the way, those of you who are following HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the website, it is, I believe, slowly coming back. It was the server on which it was held crashed some months ago, and the people who are responsible for putting it back up have been occupied with other matters, to put it charitably. But they're still working on it, and in fact some of it is coming back, and hopefully it will be available. It's where this show is archived, but you can find this show elsewhere as well. We have an incoming call, which is becoming quite an occasion here. Let's see who this is, and I think it's actually Ed Fry. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, Ed Fry.
Hey, Ed, or should I say Jailbird Fry?
Whatever.
Jailbird. No, Jailbird, I think, is the word.
Jailbird, yeah.
So you've just gotten out of 2 weeks in the lockup at first the Santa Cruz County Jail and then the farm?
Right.
What you want to tell us why they jailed you and then why they released you? Let's begin there.
Well, we made our motion for a new trial, and in the process of denying that motion, the judge then turned right away to sentencing, which we weren't prepared for. And the district attorney started talking about 400 hours of community service. And Gary and I both, Gary is my client and also the championed sleeper.
Now, let's clarify, Ed, this actually was for rape, assault, and murder, right? You were being held after a long jury trial for a very serious crime, right?
Actually, 3 nights sleeping out of doors in front of the courthouse.
That's incredible.
That was my crime.
How could you dare to do such a thing? I mean,
Gary Johnson had done it probably more 15, 20 times. So that was our crime, and the judge wanted to give us a lesson, and we also were pretty defiant toward him, so that didn't help matters. And he ended up giving us 6 months jail time, both of us. And so that's our crime, and he set the bail at $50,000 pending appeal. If we were going to appeal it, and he figured that we probably would, then we couldn't get out while the appeal was pending, and unless we paid $50,000 in bail.
$50,000 each?
Yeah.
Well, that's to make sure that you don't abscond, Ed. You're a known flight risk, right?
Yeah. Dangerous criminal. I could abscond from the county. Luckily, I was able to convince another attorney to take on the case, and he made a motion to reduce the sentence, which the judge wasn't able to do. He said, I have no jurisdiction. This was 2 weeks after we were in jail. We had this motion. So then the lawyer said, well, what about a reduction in the bail? And the judge agreed to that. He reduced it from $50,000 to $110.
Now, let me go back here. I'm going to be both the devil's advocate and the angel's advocate here.
Okay.
On the angel's side, this seems to me a little peculiar that $50,000 bail suddenly got reduced to $110. What, did you offer him a piece, a pound of flesh, a large bribe in the back room? I mean, or did he suddenly discover that he had made an error by perhaps two zeros in the bail schedule?
Well, he's sort of came to his senses and cooled down. See, he was very angry at us because we told him in kind of no uncertain terms that we didn't think we should be punished for sleeping out of doors. And he disagreed. And we didn't. He said, well, you're going to have to report to the jail now, a week from today. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. And he said, well, then you're going to go to jail right now. And he called in a couple extra deputies, and they hauled us off.
In handcuffs, correct?
Yeah.
With leg irons as well?
That came shortly thereafter, yeah.
Well, again, you might be, you know, clanking your way to freedom otherwise, or perhaps,
right.
Perhaps you would anyway. And the devil's advocate side of it, as I understand it through, I didn't look at the record directly, but I understand through somebody who did, that when you went to your original, went to a hearing on this issue back in June, you waived time for sentencing, meaning you didn't demand that there be an interval between, apparently it's customary if a new trial is denied for sentencing to happen immediately after. So it may have been that some looking at the case would say, well, why weren't you prepared to deal with sentencing right after they denied the motion for the new trial?
Well, we were focusing on all the issues involved in the new trial and not very much on sentencing. We figured, well, at least I did, that he was going to impose some, you know, rather low number of hours of community service, but then the DA said 400 hours. Well, that's 10 weeks of work, you know. And I told him, well, I'm not willing to be the slave of the government for 10 weeks. And
didn't you say, though, that you wouldn't do any time whatsoever?
Yeah, I did. I told him that voluntarily because I didn't think it was something that people should be punished for.
So it was, in essence, you were making a pretty militant stand yourself. I admire your outspokenness on this issue, but I guess, in a sense, both he stepped back and you also stepped back as well, or have you stepped back? What are you preparing an appeal in your own case, in that case of Gary Johnson?
Yeah, the notices of appeal in both cases have been filed, so it's pending now, and we're out on bail pending the appeal.
And this is an appeal to the to a three-judge panel here locally, cronies of Gallagher, the judge who sentenced you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately. I was hoping that, I'm not a criminal lawyer, so my original thought was that we were going to be able to appeal right away to the Court of Appeal in San Jose. But on looking further into it, first step, it has to be this three-judge panel at the Superior Court.
Now, will your appeal bond hold if you want to appeal beyond that? To the court in San Jose, or will you then be put in jail if these three judges turn you down? Do you know what the situation is with that?
Well, yeah, until the appeal is final, the bail should hold, and we should be free. Yeah.
So, again, playing the devil's advocate, I've been both a supporter of yours and, of course, a critic of the process, and feeling you took on far too much work. In this case, you just couldn't do it all. You were both a defendant. You were an attorney for five people, or six, perhaps, if you include yourself. I'm not quite sure. I guess Chris didn't show up at trial. There were four present, and there was you. And you were you were doing this at the behest of these folks. I kept urging you and the folks, and it was obviously their choice and your choice, too, to get public defender assistance, so at least to kind of, you know, exact a cost to the city or to the county for this absurd set of jury trials, which was, of course, under Penal Code 647E, and it was a punishment for your protesting in front of the county building, I guess an attempt to make sure that won't happen again. If you were to do this again, would you proceed any differently, do you think?
No, because unfortunately the public defender doesn't take constitutional challenges too seriously. They sort of make a gesture at doing it, and then when they gets rejected, then that's the end of it. Whereas we're in this for the long haul. If we have to go to the U.S. Supreme Court, you know, that's where we'll end up, because there are so many constitutional provisions that and principles that support people's right to sleep, and if they have no physical abode, than the right to sleep outside. So it's absurd that the courts continue to refuse to look at these constitutional provisions and constitutional principles. So that's what we're trying to force them to do. And now the judge, got more hope than faith, but, you know, I got both a little bit, I guess.
But even though, for a lot of attorneys defending these kinds of cases, and I know, because I was charged with 647, it wasn't called E in those days. I think it was called I or J back in 1990, and then again charged with it in 1993, not in Santa Cruz, but in San Francisco and Sacramento. A bunch of us were. They used that in exactly the same way. They wanted to remove a political protest from the area right in front of, in one case, San Francisco City Hall, and in a second case, in front of the Sacramento Capitol. And they did that, and they arrested everybody and took all their stuff and threw them up into the lockup and charged them with these misdemeanors. But the misdemeanors never saw the light of day in the court because there were attorneys coming forward who were going to not so much engage in constitutional challenges, but just, you know, drag out every detail of discovery and demand all this and that. And in other words, subject the courts to heavy pressure for what was clearly simply a police measure.
Yeah, and jury trials, too.
And jury trials. So, I mean, that's the reason I ask you if, because I think this kind of protest might come up again, because the same conditions still exist. As you know, there's been no increase in shelter in the last year, and there's still no walk-in shelter at all tonight, with the possible exception of two or three beds at the River Street shelter, you know, which were brought up, you know, I think rather disingenuously by the district attorney. Nobody knew about them. They're emergency beds. They couldn't possibly accommodate the people that were at Peace Camp 2010, or even the five defendants that were there.
Right.
So it was ridiculous. But still, tactics used in other cities by criminal lawyers who have, you know, experience in, you know, in at least the mechanics of all this, which you've been away from this for quite a while, and that's not your forte as an attorney, correct?
Right, I'm not a criminal lawyer. I haven't been for about 30 years, so I don't know all the procedures as well as I might if I had been more, you know, engaged in the process day to day. But you know, since no one else is standing up for these constitutional principles, somebody had to do it, so I stepped in and volunteered.
Yeah, well, I know also that you've done this decades ago in other places on behalf of the right to smoke marijuana, for instance.
Yeah, up in Mendocino County back in the 70s, early 80s, yeah.
And, you know, I guess, I mean, as a person who's been following this issue for many years myself, I think it's, you know, a really important one. Both the right to be able to, you know, use drugs of your choice without being locked away for decades and having all your property confiscated, and also basic right to sleep to sleep somewhere, but also not to have your sleep interrupted by police unless there's a legitimate public health and safety concern.
Exactly.
Which would justify that. And, of course, that's been a big taboo in Santa Cruz and, to be fair, in other cities as well, but it has received very serious scrutiny by the courts in Los Angeles and San Diego, and also in Laguna Beach, and deals have been made in Santa Barbara and I believe in Santa Monica because of threatened lawsuits by the ACLU. Did the ACLU come to your jail cell and tell you they were sending in an attorney to help you, perhaps?
No, haven't heard from the ACLU.
You know, Mike Rodkin is the treasurer of the ACLU. Perhaps he could kick down some ACLU funds for you.
Well, I'm not going to hold my breath on that one.
I hear you. How are things in jail? We're about to have attorney Cheyenne Elahi from Orlando, Florida, call in about Food Not Bombs and the recent arrests. There were two more yesterday in Orlando for the crime of being in a public park serving food without a permit. Which you can't. You can only get twice a year for any particular park in Orlando, Florida. But anything happening? What was your impression? What was life in the jail like?
Well, it was fairly noisy and chaotic, but you know, it wasn't unfriendly. It was relatively relaxed socially. There wasn't a lot of racist groupings or anything like that going on. It was okay. Yeah.
And what did you find a lot of homeless folks in jail, or would you ever reach that point of discussion with people?
Yeah, there were a few, not the majority, but there were a few.
And which cell pod were you held in?
In Santa Cruz, the F as in Frank unit, and then down in Watsonville, it was the medium security waiting to be transferred over to minimum security. And before we got transferred over to minimum, we got sprung on bail. So,
did you have access to the law library in jail?
There isn't one anymore. You have to order books in writing, and then they can only deliver five things at a time, and it makes it legal research impossible behind bars. Apparently, there was some vandalism of the books, and so they closed the law library that used to be inside the jail.
That sounds unconstitutional. I had, when I was jailed in San Francisco in 1996, we circulated a petition demanding access to the law library because, and they had some similar. They didn't claim it had been vandalized. I think they had some, you know, funding shortage or, you know, building problem because of getting people to and from the law library.
Yeah.
I think that's a constitutional requirement, but I, you know, all I know is that we petitioned them, and the more we petitioned them, the more nervous they got. And they kind of kicked me out of jail. I was thinking perhaps if you go back to jail, and I guess it's conceivable you may be returned to jail for up to, what, four months, which you would serve out of the six-month sentence?
Yes.
You might be planning to do some organizing inside the jail, and, you know, you could do, you know, weekly reports on the radio about, you know, exciting adventures of Ed Fry and Gary Johnson in jail. I mean, this could be, be a whole new national audience for that.
Yeah. Well, okay, I'll let you go. You've got this other lawyer calling in.
I'm hoping he calls. Yeah, he's supposed to be calling in. He's... It's 9:30 his time, so maybe he's, you know, out having a nightcap. You never can tell. But are you still working on? Is there any message you have to the community out there? I know there's a protest tonight. Joe Schultz is serving food at 7 o'clock in about half an hour at City Hall.
Uh huh.
Are you going to be making an appearance at that event?
I think so. Yeah, I'm go down there and see what's going
with
on
with your telltale porta potty, perhaps.
Not a chance.
That, in fact, was something you did bring every night to the homeless protests from July 4th through September 2nd, I believe.
Right.
And
yeah, it made a big difference.
And I think it showed that you gave a shit.
Thank you.
I think you did. And I think that's the only... of course, you had the assistance of Paul Lee.
Paul was able to get some funds to pay for it, and so I schlepped it down there every night.
Yes. Did Paul ever get in touch with you when you were in jail? Have you seen much of him since then?
I've seen him once, and I'll probably see him again shortly. You know.
Okay. And when is Peace Camp 2011 beginning, Ed?
Yeah. Well, that's a matter of discussion, I suppose. I have no immediate plan, but you never know what can materialize if the spirit of protest is. Can be revived, you know.
I know, and you're also doing an appeal brief for Robert Blind Bear Facer in the Sinister Sidewalk Singing case. How's that coming along?
Well, we just filed our closing brief on Tuesday, and yours was just filed a couple days before that, I guess. And so we're waiting for the oral arguments on that.
And I guess, yes, I will also be, I'll be up there making my oral arguments.
Right, and the city of Santa Cruz goes on and on, spending more money trying to defeat the First Amendment.
Well, you know, whether it's the city council, the sidewalk, or in front of the courthouse, getting rid of that pesky First Amendment seems to be a big priority of the Santa Cruz City Council.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that it is, but it's true. And they're just going to have to keep paying for it and cut back on even more on the puny amounts that they spend for social services.
Well, yeah, I mean, besides, we don't really need it. Simply draws homeless people. I think those social services have, you know what I mean.
Right.
It looks like a hearing is coming up on the Appellate Division of Santa Cruz Superior Court, in my case, July 21st, 4 p.m. in Department 3. So here's a heads up to you.
Oh, you've been notified already.
I just got a notice here, which I just opened up.
Uh-huh.
4 p.m., Department 3, July 21st. For those who aren't current with that case, that is a case of... Three of us, actually originally four, charged with singing on the sidewalk in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz in the early afternoon because it disturbed a sleeper above, a day sleeper who works at night, Sean Riley. and we were singing songs with political lyrics, which I think had a pretty good beat to them and were not unusual, but we were convicted, not by a jury, but by Judge, or I should say Commissioner Kim Baskett.
Right.
Ed, thank you again for all your work and doing these appeals and struggling with too many things at the same time, as far as I'm concerned. But keep up the good work, and I'll get back to you with more questions as time develops, I guess.
All right, Robert. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And that was indeed Attorney Ed Fry. You are tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. And I think that could be our second attorney calling in. Let's see if it is. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Attorney Cheyenne Hawaii calling from Orlando. Robert asked him to call in.
Indeed, I did. It's good to hear you, Cheyenne. How are you?
Hey, Robert, how are you?
I'm good. I'm good. It sounds a little fuzzy. How's your phone? Are you on speakerphone or on a...
No, let me see. Is this any better?
I think it is. Yeah, I think that's
okay,
better.
Okay, perfect.
Well, Cheyenne, we just had Ed Fry on. He was the lawyer here who was jailed for not feeding homeless people, as your clients are being jailed in Orlando, but for sleeping outside with them, providing a porta potty for them, defending them in court. He wasn't charged with defending clients, but he was charged himself with what we call in California illegal lodging, which means being somewhere where the authorities don't want you to be. It's kind of a catch-all ordinance used against homeless people, but because it's a misdemeanor, it requires a jury trial. So unlike local infraction ordinances, which in Santa Cruz and California, or at least in our jurisdiction, don't use jury trials because it's too expensive for them. They just have a judge. I know that in Orlando, you have at least 20, 25 people who are now charged with violating an ordinance requiring a permit to feed in the public parks in Orlando?
That's exactly right, and it is a misdemeanor of the second degree that is punishable by 60 days in jail. So it will require a jury trial. And, my understanding is that in 2006, a member of was tried for violating this ordinance and was found not guilty at trial. So, after, just to give a little bit of procedural history of the case, after that it was sent up to Middle District of Florida, which is based here in Orlando, to basically check the constitutionality of this ordinance. And Judge Personnel found that this ordinance to be unconstitutional. And Orlando then sent it up to 11th Circuit, and they appealed. And, of course, as you and your listeners might know, that in April, the 11th Circuit ruled that this ordinance was constitutional, and obviously since then these arrests have been taken.
Now tell us about this ordinance, and if you know anything about the history of food knob bombs prior to the ordinance, you're in the middle of a city that's attempting, like many cities, to redevelop and to sweep away the unsightly poor from the downtown area?
Yes, this is definitely what, quote-unquote, gentrification fight. Orlando used to be a very different city 15 years ago, and it's become what I call, and again, Orlando is a fine town, the people are fine people, and, we welcome our tourists and we take care of each other. I think the problem is coming from the top here. So just to let your listeners know, I believe that if the mayor was actually, had the political courage to put this to vote today, there is no way this ordinance would win over. There's no way. But anyway, having said that, the city started cleaning up the downtown area, condos, high-rises, all that started coming around. They tried to attract a lot of young professionals, urban professionals to the city. Of course, ironically, a lot of these condos are still empty because of, as we all know, what happened in 2007, 2008, the economy, the recession, the depression, whatever you want to call it. But the city's persistence regarding this ordinance has not gone away. And I think this mayor has made it very personal to himself and has taken upon himself to basically punish Orlando food knob bombs specifically. As you know, he called them food terrorists. I don't know if you or your listeners know about that aspect of this, but the mayor has called these people food terrorists. So you can imagine where his mind's at. He's not thinking about so much about the ordinance as he is thinking about this group specifically.
Food, not bombs.
Right.
Well, I know Keith McHenry, the co-founder of Food Not Bombs, has been called a terrorist numerous times by numerous authorities in numerous places for his terrible grinning, joking, and carrot cooking, which have been pretty serious stuff. I mean, the guy is he's a well-known vegetarian, a vegan even, you would say. I guess again, I'm wondering who cooked up this ordinance in the first place. What was the motivation? Was it a city attorney?
The motivation. The commissioner. Her name is Patty Sheehan, who represents what you would consider the downtown area. She's the commissioner from that area, and you know, ironically, of all people, she's an openly gay commissioner, and obviously, we were all very proud of the fact that Orlando elected her. But it came from her, of all people. Somebody who understands how a subculture and a group of people can be persecuted. It came from her. She's very stubborn. She refuses to talk to people about this. I have talked to a lot of elected people. Just to let you know, I happen to be in the Democratic Party. I'm the head of their chair of their affirmative action committee. So it's not, and you know, Mayor Dyer happens to be in the party as well. So this is an interesting aspect of it.
What about Patty? She's in the party?
Patty is a Democrat. Unfortunately, our elections are nonpartisan, are on a nonpartisan basis, but yeah, she is in the party. But at the same time, she refuses to talk to people. I've made a lot of calls around town, and what I hear is that she is very stubborn about this. From what we understand is that she lives in the area, and a couple of people, maybe some of her friends, maybe some business people, and this is back in 2006, by the way, complained to her. She brought it up for a vote, and two commissions voted against it. Four voted for it. And there wasn't really enough evidence to sufficiently back up the claim that this was causing any real disruption. But it did pass, and that's just how, you know, democracy works. But having said that, it's 2011. I think we all understand where the economy stands. We all understand homelessness is rising. We all understand the working poor are hurting. And I think to have this kind of mean-spirited law enforced in such a mean-spirited way is definitely an attack on the very foundation of what, you know, American spirit and American charity is all about. You know, we give charity to the rest of the world. We are charitable people as a nation. And as cities as well. Orlando is a very charitable place. Like I said, we're really good to our tourists, as you know, and we're good to each other.
Well, let me be devil's advocate here and interrupt you for a moment, Shay. I mean, Food Not Bombs, at least the militant people in Food Not Bombs that I know, don't talk about Food Not Bombs as being charity at all. Although they, you know, we like to appeal to the obvious sympathies that. Because I worked with Food Not Bombs, well, at least when I was doing it. It's a political group that is concerned with changing priorities.
To be honest with you, let me stop you there. I'm not concerned about that.
Okay.
I am an Orlando resident. I represent Orlando Food Not Bombs.
Right.
Okay? Let me tell you, I'm not concerned about the group in that way that you're talking about. I don't know what's happening in San Francisco. Okay? I don't know what's happening in other places. I'm not here to defend the group or talk about it or talk for it. I'm an attorney who wants to talk about Orlando and what is happening to the people of Orlando. Keith McHenry is might be from somewhere else, but a lot of people getting arrested are from Orlando. And this is our town, and this is our mayor doing something we don't want to do in Orlando. Orlando people don't want this law. So I want you to focus on that.
I will focus on that.
We make a big mistake by talking about food not bombs. Yes, that's great, but look at the actual individuals who are going and feeding the hungry in these parks. There are people from Orlando.
Well, I don't care where they're from, and I'm glad that people...
Well,
I
care.
Of course you do.
I care. That's why I stepped up. Why do you think I stepped up?
Well,
I love San Francisco, but I'm not from there.
No, but I would hope that if you saw an injustice and you happened to be observing it, you would step up regardless of where the people were from.
I mean, that is true, but
that's the point there.
I live here. if I would live in San Francisco, people did step up in San Francisco, as you know, right? Lawyers, great lawyers stepped
yeah,
up to help them there.
Cheyenne, this isn't about San Francisco. It is about the fact that Ben Markison on this show told me a week ago, Food Not Bombs, Orlando Food Not Bombs, is not a charitable organization. It is an organization concerned with
okay,
changing
can you
priorities.
Discuss that with him. I'm an attorney. I'm talking about the law. You can discuss. I don't care what Food Not Bombs is doing as long as
I don't know what we're fighting about.
They
because
make
I think,
that decision.
You know,
I don't make decisions for them.
Right. No. And I'm
as a lawyer, I can tell you what I'm doing. I'm stepping up to help people who are helping others.
Okay. Well, that's good. And I'm glad you are. You know, I'm pointing out, however, that when you talk about charity, and that could be your perspective and why you're doing it, I think a Food Not Bomb spokespeople would go a step beyond that, and they would say, we want to see the world's priorities change. And that, and the reason I mention it to you is not to discredit what you're doing. I think it's good what you're doing. But to suggest that the motivation of the city in repressing it may be because they don't care about, they don't particularly want to repress charitable organizations. They don't like the politics of this group. What do you think of that idea?
You're exactly right. Robert, let me tell you a little, the injunction that I filed specifically talks about the First Amendment issue. I don't know if you
were able to take
a look at the paperwork.
I did look at it, but why don't you describe for the audience what your attempted injunction is seeking and how likely it is to succeed.
There are two components to it. One is that there's an administrative order signed by our chief judge, Delvin Perry, who happens to be the judge who's running the Casey Anthony case. He basically prescribed a way that people who are arrested for municipal ordinance violations should be treated. And he laid out a criteria that if you meet that, then you should be given a notice of appearance and asked to appear in court. And one of the problems we're having is that the city has given these police officers a carte blanche to basically go into the park and arrest people from Food Not Bombs, Orlando Food Not Bombs, and take them, haul them off to jail, and have them, you know, either bond out or then determine at that point whether they can be released on recognizance or not.
In other words, rather than citing them with an infraction citation, they are being jailed and they're then, in essence, they're being kidnapped and held for ransom and released on ransom and also released with this condition that they not go back to the park on pain of a trespass ticket and it appears to be a more lengthy jailing such as Keith McHenry is now suffering, right?
Well, that's the other issue. They are being given a trespass warning at the time of the arrest, and the other component of my injunction is that the trespass warning in Orlando contained a First Amendment exemption, meaning if you were given a trespass to a public park or public area, you could call a number if you want to go back into that park for a First Amendment activity. And then, you know, there was an exemption for that. But what they did was the city, a week to 10 days after they had issued these warnings, decided to unilaterally and without process, without explanation, take out that First Amendment language from the trespass warnings and have everybody reissued a warning. Now, I have asked them to explain that, and I have a hearing in the morning at 8:30 tomorrow morning where I hope that the city attorney would come and explain to the judge exactly why and how they did that. So I'll have a better idea about what their position is. As of yet, they have not answered anyone about this issue at all. And that goes to the politics of it. That goes exactly, Robert, to what you are raising. Of course, the mayor, that's why I said the mayor has made it specific to this organization because, yes, perhaps he doesn't like their politics, perhaps he doesn't like their persistence. But having said that, in the end, it is about, at least to me, about people helping people. Whatever motivation they have, whatever world perspective they have, in the end, somebody lifts a hand, takes food in their hand, and gives it to someone and says, here, I'm your brother, I am sharing food with you. And that is the core of, I all the people I've met from this group, they may have different political views about why they're doing this, but that's something we can all agree on.
Well,
and that's why I stepped up, and that's why I'm not going to
I think that's what moves you, and I'm glad to hear that. I know that that's certainly what moves some people in the Food Not Bombs groups I've, you know, talked to and been involved with or even reported on. But I think even more deeply what Food Not Bombs groups, many of them do, and I think Orlando the people I've talked to have demonstrated this, is they don't just want to be charitable. They want to essentially empower people to find ways to get out of poverty through helping each other. And that may be even more of a threat to existing authorities, that kind of organization.
You know, anti-poverty reforms and anti, you know, you know, the anti-homeless attitude and the anti a socioeconomic, a political attack on a socioeconomic group, and what these people are doing to prevent that. I think that would be a threat to any political apparatus that wants to stay in its, you know, to maintain the status quo. I don't think, I doubt that. But here's the core issue. You know, every city I've heard, and this is what I believe is happening, this is spreading. I understand that, you know, San Francisco went through this. Just in Florida, Tampa went through this. Fort Lauderdale has gone through that. My understanding is Jacksonville is doing the same thing. So what the problem we're facing is, we are starting a trend. We're seeing a trend of people who call themselves Democrats, who call themselves progressives, who call themselves liberal, basically behaving in a fashion which is not acceptable in the 21st century. And I think I agree with you completely. I think that Mayor does see this as a political problem for him. And you know what? In Orlando, I'll tell you one thing. I know you mentioned that Keith hasn't called this and that for a long time. I don't know about that. He'll tell me. I'll see him tomorrow. I'll ask him. But in Orlando, we don't allow our mayor to say that, because that is defamation. I have sent him 6 notices on behalf of 6 people from Orlando Food Not Bombs, asking him to apologize, or we will file lawsuits, because Orlando is better than that.
Well, it's not just better than that. I mean, the people who are working as public figures trying to help other people and organize, ordinary people have a right not to be defamed by those in anywhere, but specifically right. Not to be defamed by those in positions of political power, where it's really invidious. I mean, I myself was accused of being a criminal by the mayor, and I got him to retract that, because being a criminal, I mean, I'm also a free speech advocate. I think anybody should be able to say whatever they want, generally. But when a person who makes a false statement like that from a position of political power, and it has an impact on one's reputation, then I think, you know, that's it's a conflict for me, for sure. But I think we were able to get then Mayor Scott Kennedy to retract his statement, because I haven't been convicted of any crimes in Santa Cruz of that sort. So, and Keith McHenry has never been accused, much less convicted, or any Orlando Food Not Bombs member convicted of being a, whatever it might be, a food terrorist.
Right.
I would call.
And Robert, I agree with you on the First Amendment. I am absolutely in love with the First Amendment, just as it sounds like you are as well. But at the same time, when you are dealing with politicians who are using, the word of the community to undercut their political opponents, then you have to push back. And that's what's going on.
Well,
the reason
who are lying
that Mayor said this is because that's a buzzword.
Politicians who are lying to the community in order to repress legitimate political and charitable activity, I need to be held to account, and I'm really glad you're trying to do that in Orlando.
Right.
I got a couple of kind of technical questions for you.
Sure.
We're talking, by the way, for those who just tuned in, with Cheyenne Alahi, who's a what kind of a lawyer are you there in Orlando, Cheyenne?
Well, I mainly practice criminal defense. I used to be a public defender, and I do obviously civil rights cases as well. I have my main practice is criminal defense.
And are you, you don't have to answer this, but are you doing this pro bono? Are you getting paid?
Yes, I am. No, I am doing this pro bono.
And I know that one of the previous attorneys involved here got a little nervous with the quote, civil disobedience aspect, though frankly I think it's the mayor and the commissioners that are being constitutionally disobedient by these kinds of ordinances and these kinds of police practices. But from a certain point of view, they passed this law so everybody has to walk around tiptoeing around their rights, or actually ignoring their rights, because a law was passed by a bunch of politicians who are trying to pander to a particular segment of the community that doesn't like to see homeless people in visible poverty. I guess the question I have is, I'm losing my way here. Let me see. You Have you had a lot of experience with this kind of case before, or is this sort of your first trial with this kind of stuff, with this kind of First Amendment poverty type cases?
In the poverty type cases, yes. I mean, I've been involved in organizations that feed the hungry and homeless in Orlando for a little while, but this specific issue I haven't dealt with before, as far as, you know, but I've dealt with other issues regard where political problems came to bear on, you know, here's the issue. Okay, let me tell you a little bit about myself, if you don't mind, Robert.
Go ahead.
You know, I grew up in Pakistan under martial law, okay? When I was a kid.
You grew up where? I'm sorry?
I grew up in Pakistan.
In
Pakistan.
In Pakistan, I got you.
Yes, under martial law. When I was growing up, you know, there were tanks and military rule all around, and speech was suppressed, and people were always told what to do. So I grew up under that atmosphere, and, you know, what America represents to me is, as an immigrant and as a lawyer, you know, I'm a firm believer in the Bill of Rights, and I'm a firm believer that American spirit and exceptionalism will make things better. That's my belief. Now, having said that, my belief in the justice system is absolute, and I don't want it shaken. So every time someone acts in a way like this mayor is doing, which is with hubris and political arrogance, you know, what little I can do, I will do, and that's the main focus for me. Because I believe it's an election year for this mayor, and, you know, if your listeners have, you know, they have phones and they have emails, you know, let this mayor know, you know, that everybody's watching him. It's an election year for Patty Sheehan, who brought that, you know, that cursed ordinance, and let her know what, you know, that everybody's watching her. Nothing makes a politician sweat more than the fact that they may have some opposition. And so this mayor is basically just reacting. He's a career politician. He has nothing positive to add to Orlando, nothing. He's going for his third term. He doesn't need to. There are other people who can take care of this town.
Well, you know,
he has nothing else to do.
The argument that was used, I mean, I for example, am a strong opponent of both McCain and Obama regarding their war policies. And I see no difference between, you know, the Bush administration and the Obama administration on that. My question to you is, in Orlando, is Orlando pretty much a Democratic Party, one-party state area, or do other parties have a legitimate opportunity to contest? Is it
Orlando is a very conservative area. Even the Democratic Party, as you can see, we have a Democratic mayor who's behaving in such a fashion. So we do have, it's not a one-party town at all. The elections are nonpartisan. But having said that, you know, it is a town where change is possible because the town itself is changing. There are more Democrats registered in Orange County, which Orlando is in, than Republicans. So, yes, there's a good chance. But having said that, this is not a Democratic-Republican issue, as you can imagine. A lot of Republicans don't want this ordinance either. You know, it's an Orlando issue. We're not like this. This mayor doesn't know who we are. This mayor has no idea what the people want.
Isn't this
and he doesn't care because he doesn't have the political courage. And we've told him, we've asked him, we said, if you are so convinced that you are doing the right thing, why don't you put this up for a referendum in the upcoming municipal elections, or bring it up for another vote after public comment and see what happens and see how they vote?
Of course, they would.
But you will never do that.
No mayor of any city, and many cities have tried to repress food not bombs, Arcata, San Francisco, Santa Cruz, and various cities in New Mexico and up and down the East Coast, and often unsuccessfully, because people like yourself and grassroots activists have stood up and said, no, we're going to keep feeding each other. We're going to keep raising these issues. You're not going to stop us with this network of spider web of ordinances. That's not going to work. The reason it doesn't work, though, is because people are willing to take significant risks to stand up to this ordinance. And indeed, you mentioned yesterday two people were arrested. What happened yesterday, as far as you know?
Well, it's the same thing. My understanding is, and this is coming from Benjamin Markison, that, you know, they did food sharing, according, you know, and allegedly these people were there and they were arrested under the ordinance. So the same thing has been happening since June 1st. It's nothing different. Obviously, it's happening week after week. Let me clarify a couple of things. First of all, you know, you're exactly right. I mean, without these people stepping up, you know, I'm just giving them legal services. That's all. My role is very limited, and not only that, you know, I just want to clarify, I do not take any credit for any of this. This is not about me whatsoever, so please let me just clarify that. Like I said, whatever little I can do, I'm doing, and I'll try to keep doing. But having said that, you know, if Food Not Bombs people decided tomorrow that they weren't going to do this, that's their decision, again. So I want to be clear about that, because you mentioned the last attorney. There's one attorney. I don't like to talk about another attorney. I don't know exactly what happened, but this is something that's interesting. The mayor started this complete fabrication to tell everybody that he was trying to negotiate with Orlando Food Not Bombs, and they fired their last attorney, which is not true, as Benny would tell you and Keith would tell you. Whatever the reasons were, the other attorney went away, is between them and the attorney. But what's interesting is this mayor is such a political hack. He's such a career politician that he takes every little thing and spins it and spins it until it sounds like everything. He's the one who is being victimized here. So, you know, that's an interesting aspect of even what happened between Orlando Food Not Bombs and their previous attorney.
Well, the reason I brought it up was in my conversations with some Food Not Bombs people in Orlando, I learned that the other attorney was uncomfortable with the fact that Food Not Bombs activists were continuing to feed, even though the courts had ruled that this ordinance, this absurd and abusive ordinance, which limits feeding to twice a year in any particular park for more than 25 people, something like that, is constitutional. And therefore, she didn't want to be involved with people violating the law because that maybe compromised her. I mean, and I think that, you know, that's, I often find that a regrettable position, whether it's in an attorney or non-attorney, because I think that this undue reverence for unjust laws is a serious part of the whole problem we face, whether it's with drone strikes in Pakistan or, you know, police action in Orlando. You have people who somehow think that if somebody wrote a law about it, everybody else has to follow it, you know, because that's a, quote, democratic process, when usually it's not a democratic process at all. Most of it, usually it's a plutocratic process that involves rule by the rich, by those who have the money and the power, and those who have the political influence. And I'm not even necessarily asking you to comment on that, but that's my understanding.
No, I understand what you're saying, Robert. And here's the issue with that. You know, I'm a very ethical attorney. I'm an officer of the court. Like I said, I'm not a member of the group. If they decide to stop tomorrow, that'll be their decision. But I have a legal obligation. You know, I provide professional services. I provide legal services to people, okay? That's the same argument people make about public defenders. When I was a public defender, people would say, how can you represent a child molester or somebody who has beaten someone up? Well, because we serve the Constitution. A Constitution says everyone deserves a defense. Right, Robert? I mean, we agree on that, right? So people can have this person as much
defenses,
as they want.
That's the problem.
But I know that I'm an ethical attorney, and I walk the ethical line, and I'm doing my job to represent people who need a legal defense. So I don't know what happened between them and the last attorney, but that's my position on that. So anyone who says that about, you know, representing people who are breaking the law will make that argument about anybody. So by that logic, no one who ever breaks the law should get any legal representation.
Right. I think she was nervous about continuing to represent people who are consciously and clearly saying we are disregarding this particular ordinance because we believe it's both unconstitutional and
inhumane.
Well,
that's like saying that, you know, Martin Luther King or Gandhi should not have had legal counsel.
Right.
Although I believe Gandhi was a lawyer himself.
And
but
they,
you know what I mean. The
right.
point being, and I'm not comparing, I'm not making the comparison, I'm just stretching the logic. I'm making a logical argument where people who do civil disobedience and are accused of breaking the law also need lawyers. That's part of a lawyer's job.
Getting back to the Democratic Party hack problem, which we have here in Santa Cruz, our mayor has passed and supported a whole number of anti-homeless laws in Santa Cruz, and in a much smaller town than Orlando.
Right. It's a beautiful town. I've been there. It's a beautiful town.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you. Yes. Well, I mean, it's I don't want to thank me. It's it, yeah. I mean, I'm sure Orlando's well. Orlando's the home of Disney World. What can I say?
No. Doesn't compare. Orlando's pretty, but Santa Cruz is a gorgeous place.
Well, it's also the home of Food Not Bombs in Orlando. At least one of the Food Not Bombs is. And right now, it's the home of a bunch of people who are essentially fighting to, I think, establish rights that people need to know they have all over the country. And that's why I think it's worth devoting this kind of time on a show 3,000 miles away to what you're doing in Orlando. It sounded a little bit like, you know, you're trying to, you know, you're trying to not distinguish yourself from supporting Food Not Bombs or supporting Keith McHenry, more like you're supporting the Orlando community's conscience and its willingness to say, this is outrageous. This is not something we stand for. Though, frankly, Democratic Party hacks in cities all over the country not only stand for this kind of stuff, but pass laws against it regularly. So it's, you know, that's the problem. You know, you're stuck with the Democratic Party hacks, the Republican Party hacks, or the third party people that never get elected anyway without people showing up in massive numbers like in Tahrir Square, which doesn't happen much in the United States, although there did seem to be moments in Wisconsin and perhaps elsewhere. Let me ask about that generally. Do you have a sense that there is a chance for meaningful political change? I mean, the mayor's never going to bring these laws up for re-vote. He's never going to put it up for an initiative. I mean, let's get real. And the person who replaces him isn't likely to do that either, unless, I mean, it's like asking Obama to withdraw from Afghanistan. You know, he's going to withdraw 10,000 troops now, and at the end of his term, he'll have twice as many as he had when he started. You know,
I do like the way you kind of compare.
Well, it's all part of the same picture. You know? I mean, that's
I understand. Yeah. Here's the deal. I realistically speaking, it is possible. Frankly, it is possible because all politics is local. I mean, I just articulated earlier what I think, you know, shakes politicians up, which is opposition, meaning, hey, you know, someone's going to run against me, and they may have some support because whether it's for one issue or two issue, you know, think of Republican politics. What do they do? You know, most of the people who are running in the Republican primary right now, they're 1-2 trick ponies. They don't understand, a lot of them don't understand economics, a lot of them don't understand, you know, even the war on, you know, issues or security issues. They just, you know, abortion and gay marriage. You know, those are the two things they do. I mean, and they fool everybody with it, and they spread their hate and get the support.
And ironically, Cheyenne, yeah. I found that some of the most right-wing Republicans will stand up for homeless people and the right to serve free food. That was the case with Wiley Drake in Buena Park, California, who's a notoriously anti-gay, you know, big supporter of Bush militarism, rabidly fundamentalist. Nice guy, by the way. I like him personally.
Mm-hmm.
He would go down to court and defend homeless people. They would try to arrest for sleeping in vehicles outside the church. They had to arrest him because he insisted on putting people up in the church and feeding them. Against the wishes
maybe
of the
city. You know, he considered himself a good Christian. Is that it? And he did.
Yes,
that was
yes.
his motivation. I
correct.
Think.
That's what that motivation
was. So that's
was.
Why I said this is not a Democratic Republican issue. This is an issue about people of Orlando, the conscience of Orlando, and that we are better than this. And so, you know, going back to your point, you know, all politics is local, and change can come because this is a political issue, and the mayor knows that. That's why he is doing what he's doing. That's why he's calling these people terrorists. He's defaming them to cut them from their, you know, knees down because he's saying, don't listen to these people. They are troublemakers.
So perhaps you need
he's sweating.
You need a local WikiLeaks to start releasing stuff on Buddy Dyer, the mayor's decision-making processes and so forth, and the people that are supporting him. Have any political figures actually come out and spoken out against this in Orlando that might give us some real hope that what you're saying isn't just, frankly...
Not openly, but, yeah. You know, I've only been involved in this situation for 2 weeks, so give me a little bit of time.
Okay, and indeed, you've given me already 45 minutes, more or less. I appreciate
Robert, you talking to me, and I maybe I'm just a... naive or just a hopeless optimist, but I do think change is possible, especially when everybody is in agreement. I'm telling you, the people of Orlando are in agreement on this. I know the pulse of Orlando. I've talked to a lot of people across, you know, party lines. I just think it's a matter of moving in the right direction.
But the people at the top,
we'll lose the election in March.
And the people at the top
will lose the election in March.
He may, but what about the people that are any? No commissioners so far are willing to call for a revote on this or bring it up, anything of that sort.
Well, because remember, this just started on June 1st. Tomorrow we're having a hearing where the city attorneys are going to come and explain their position to the judge, and also in the city hall. This is my understanding. I wasn't there, but city hall meeting last week. A lot of people from Orlando Food Not Bombs went and questioned the mayor, and he really didn't have much answers. He just hurled accusations like a juvenile, you know, at them. He had no position. He keeps calling, he does name calling from while perched up on his city hall. And so I think, you know, down the road, I think it'll show his color, his true colors will show. And I think people who are already kind of tired of having him for 10 years will, you know, we'll see him for who he is, really.
Do you have any understanding?
And I think the change will come.
Well, I hope so. Do you have any understanding of why Keith McHenry is actually in jail? I understand that. I mean,
yes, I do.
I mean, specifically, was his table 2 inches into the grass of the park? Did he walk around the table into the park? Did he walk?
You know, I cannot talk about the case. As you know, I represent him. It's all
right.
Confidential. You understand? But what I can tell you is that he should be out tomorrow night. I'm going to go see him tomorrow. We have a court date, and he will be out tomorrow night.
And this is actually a few days earlier than he would normally be out because he was being held without bail. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's public, so I can talk about that. Yeah, his because he was arrested on the, you know, the trespass, they revoked his bail on the municipal ordinance issue. But having said that, I hope that you'll be able to talk to him sooner rather than later.
Sure. I know I've actually tried to get through Ben to have him give me a call, but there's some very complicated procedures that I wasn't able to master to put money on his phone
bill. Yeah, it's a pain. And besides, everything in jail is recorded, so I wouldn't, not that this is not being aired, but everything in jail is recorded, so I don't advise my clients to talk on the phone.
Well, I assume everything I say is getting heard anyway, and I hope to educate the people who are listening, you know, anyway. Anyway,
well, I
Cheyenne,
appreciate your time, Robert.
I appreciate you taking the time, and for those who want to know more about this, have you any recommendations? I guess they can go to Orlando Food Not Bombs website. They can go to the Orlando Sentinel.
I think they should go to the mayor, Buddy Dyer's website, and I think they should send him an email, letting him know that they heard about it.
Do you have
this,
an email address? It's Buddy, D-Y-E-R, Buddy Dyer?
Yes, I believe it's buddy.dyer@cityoforlando.net. Or actually, if you go, you know, I wish I had written this down, but I think if you go to the City of Orlando website, his email is right there. So, and you can just.
Well, what you can do, Cheyenne, send me the send me some numbers and emails, and on Sunday I will announce it when I come back and do my 9:30 to 1 o'clock in the afternoon show, and
right,
we will, you know,
good.
Encourage people to, should we say, ask, buddy up with Buddy, so to speak.
Yeah, we here's the deal, Robert. We decided not to call him Buddy because he's no buddy to the poor. So his real name being John Dyer,
uh-huh.
We're kind of calling him that, but. What I got to say is that, you know, just send him an email and send him my regards. Tell him at least he should call me back.
Tell him Cheyenne sent me. Thank you. We've been talking with Cheyenne Elahi. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right, Robert.
Of Orlando, Florida, civil rights attorney, former public defender, and current pro bono attorney for a lot of folks down there who are trying to restore some sanity and some justice and some food to people who are poor and need it in Orlando.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you.
And to everybody in California, good evening.
Amen. Take Bye-bye. Care. And phone lines are open for those of you who are listening to this and actually want to call in. What a concept. We have two numbers, 427-3772, 427-3772, area code 831, 831-427-3772, or you can call 831-469-3119, 469-3119. Again, 427-3772 and 469-3119. So, So I'm, again, want to remind you that at City Hall, I believe there is a protest, a meal actually being served by Joe Schultz of India Joe's in solidarity with Orlando Food Not Bombs. those who have been arrested and jailed, and I think everybody's out of jail but Keith McHenry at the moment, as far as I know, but they have been arrested and they face 3 months in jail each for serving for free food, just as Ed Fry, our previous guest, and Gary Johnson have been convicted and face 6 months in jail for the crime of essentially political protest by sleeping on the steps of the courthouse at night and refusing to leave when the sheriffs told them to go away. And you might say, well, why don't you just do what the police tell you to do? And the answer, of course, is because you're there for the purpose of raising issues to judicial authorities, elected representatives, the community generally, and that you have a right to be there. And if you surrender those rights, you do not only yourself a disservice, you do a disservice to the entire community. And that's really kind of the heavy weight that I feel whenever I succumb to unjust authority. I feel that. It's a kind of a... I feel not just personally diminished, I feel like I've let somebody down somewhere. Maybe it's myself that I feel I've let down, but I feel someone somehow is being let down by that. So, what I have on tape here, and I guess I'm going to get back to some of these tapes, is... I was playing some flashbacks or some tape I didn't have time to play last year from September of 2010, from August of 2010, around the time when Ed Fry and Gary Johnson and others were ticketed or arrested and driven away from the county building. It didn't end the Peace Camp 2010 protest. They moved to City Hall and protested there peacefully in an orderly manner. But they were still mercilessly harassed with floodlights, with new ordinances and laws, with wake-up calls, with property confiscations and sign confiscations, even though they were trying simply to exercise a basic First Amendment right. And they were also trying to dramatize and break through the mist of lies and misconceptions that surrounds homeless community in Santa Cruz, specifically that, you know, we somehow have these great liberal Democrats, progressives running the city. They're doing all they can under Vice Mayor Don Lane and Mayor Ryan Coonerty, the constitutional law civil liberties guy who runs the very liberal bookshop Santa Cruz, or his family does. You know, that's, that this is a wonderful liberal administration we have here. They certainly wouldn't be violating people's rights. Those dirty Republicans are the ones that, no, they aren't. The people in power, whatever their label, that tend to be doing that. And they're the people that need to be held in check constantly, unfortunately. As has been said as a cliche, eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. It just is. And sometimes more than other times, but in Orlando, particularly on the issue of food, and in Santa Cruz on the issue of the right homeless people to sleep legally. Not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere. So let's hear some interviews from. It's not just going to be a by and about Peace Camp 2010 participants, but also homeless folks around that time who I interviewed on numerous topics.
Arrested this morning when I woke up to. He wasn't even sleeping, but he was still refused to give information and identification or even talk to the officer because he felt he was doing nothing wrong. It was his first day here. He got up and peacefully said, "I'm doing nothing wrong." He then began to walk away very slow. The officer then began to grab him by the neck, and he said, "I saw him grip." He said, "You're being detained," and he sat him down. And
you're being detained.
Yeah, so I don't know, man. It's whatever. I just got up and I was just whatever. They didn't even say anything to me. It's kind of, I don't even know.
But you didn't get a ticket.
I don't know how you got that name out of it, man.
That's not his name.
The name remains unnameless, you know, because he wouldn't even give him the name in the first place. So it still remains unnameless.
Well, when he gets back, give the. Because we were wondering, want to track him in jail if he's being hassled in jail or what? If he hasn't been released yet, as far as you know.
No, I don't think so.
At least he hasn't come back here.
And they took his property too, so hopefully he gets that back safely.
But we're talking with.
Pete.
Thank you, Pete.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, sure. Should be on the radio, well, and on the stream of the radio tonight.
Can I give a shout-out to my good
friend? Sure.
Give a shout-out to my good friend, Robert. He's in L.A. right now. I miss you, brother. I hope I see you again soon.
Thank you, Pete. Stretcher, you've moved from the county building to City Hall, and you're lounging about on bedding. This could be construed as an encampment.
I got my first ticket this morning.
Hi. Under what name is this ticket?
Michael Orr, like my real name.
That's O-R-R?
No.
For our police records?
O-H-R-E.
Aha. So you put your Orr in, so to speak.
Both of them.
And this is the point at which Peace Camp 2010 actually moved in the middle of the night back to City Hall, which actually is the place at where the sleeping ban law emanated from, the Santa Cruz City Ordinance Against Sleeping. Although what Ed Fry and Gary Johnson were convicted of was lodging, which is was defined by Judge Gallagher as sleeping, even before a jury with a much higher penalty, up to 6 months in jail, for which they received the maximum sentence, 6 months in jail. But the protest moved back to City Hall under the initiative of Chris Doyen, in order to the motivation was not entirely clear, but the explicit motivation was, I guess, to maintain a media focus on the protest, which they did. The media continued to follow this protest in great detail and often with a lot of inaccuracy, but certainly at least stayed on the radar of the local media in a much stronger and more persistent way than has ever been the case with a prior homeless protest. And also, as I said, this is the City Hall, is where the Municipal Code 6.36010A, the sleeping ban, which makes it legal for anyone to sleep outside on any public property or even on in a vehicle legally parked after 11 o'clock at night until 8:30 in the morning. And so it was also a reasonable place to go. And I guess they were also hoping the city might give a different reception to the protest, and given that people are continuing to do it, then the county officials, who, after being relatively tolerant for a month, rammed down sort of the iron, you know, the iron fist under the cotton gloves or the velvet gloves, whatever. Let's hear some more of these interviews. These are at City Hall, probably late at night. I think it was the first night that the group returned to. Went to City Hall from the county building and stayed there for a month.
So what was the nature of the citation? I think it was a 6.36010A?
Correct. Camping.
What did the police officers tell you as they wrote you up?
They said, just be nice and we'll be nice. And I said, okay.
Names of the cops were?
I don't know, and I didn't care.
Well, that's a hardly positive attitude towards our SBCBDsters.
No, I just, you know, it was enough just to sit here and get the ticket so I could go back to sleep, because I'm not feeling very good.
And did you go back to sleep?
Yes, I did.
Did the police observe you engaging in continued criminal activity, for which they just ticketed you?
Yes, I did, because I lit up a cigarette.
Oh, and then smoking in the area? I mean, what more do we need to have you put away for at least, you know, 3 unattended infractions equals a misdemeanor? It could be big-time jail for you, big boy.
It's my first one, and I got 5 already with no-shows, and they still don't haul me in.
A derelict police force. That's the trouble. They're just not strong enough. They're not stiff enough. They're not rough enough. They're not tough enough.
Darn it, I act like a gentleman, and they leave me alone. That's nice.
There you go. Nicely put, yes. More of an on-the-spot account of what happened this morning at 4 o'clock on Thursday morning.
Sorry, I'm not really interviewing.
Well, August. Go ahead.
Yeah. The buddy over here is sitting in on the sleeping the mattress. He was sleeping. He was the first one that got ticketed. I heard the cop coming up. I ripped off my... So I had a solar cover on, so it was like kind of like tinfoil, you know, mm-hmm. like a space blanket. Mm-hmm. I ripped that off. Cop looked at me in the eyes, and then I woke up my friend next to me after he was looking away. Mm-hmm. We got up. We continued to play cards, converse.
With or without a permit?
A permit?
No, you don't need a permit. I'm pulling your chain.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know. We were just playing some poker or whatever. Just, like, killing time. Cop came over. Looked me in the eyes.
You're over 21, gambling.
Oh, of course. You know, I should have looked him in the eyes and told him. But anyway.
He looked you in the eye.
He looked me in the eyes. Then he looked at my friend in the eyes. Said, oh, I'm going to get your information, sir. And then, of course, he didn't have. No one has information, so I don't have information either. So I'm glad you didn't ask me.
No information. Thank you, Pete, and thank you, Dreamcatcher. We're talking with...
Red.
and read you say you had an encounter with a, it was a Finn Parks and Rec woman in green with, I'm not sure what color her hair is.
Brown.
Brown hair. Sort of slim.
White, yeah.
And white woman. And I believe we're talking about Mia Duquette, but I'm not sure. She was doing some air blowing or some leaf blowing or something.
Yeah, and she threatened us that she was going to blow us all in the face and all our stuff around.
Did she say that or did she just kind of do it?
Yes, she did.
And what exactly, what were the words she used?
You asked Chris. Chris knows the actual words. But she did come around, and she's really mean. I have photographs. I have a photograph of her putting an air blower on a guy in his sleeping bag. I have a photograph of my eight-month-old puppy with her pointing the air blower directly at my puppy and freaked her out and blew her. And when I was taking the picture, I didn't have enough time to sign it to the location. And she came after me with the blow dryer, with the blow air blower. And I take 5 paces back, and she came 5 paces forward, and she's had it pointed in my face, and she's blowing the fucking air in my face.
Now, where were you standing when this happened?
I was standing right here by my puppy.
And then she came up. Stand in front of the
right here in front
the,
of the
directory display
yes.
here in front of
yes.
the hall.
Yes, and she chased my puppy underneath the chair. And I said, hey, what are you doing with my puppy? And she started blowing, and I took a picture of her, and then she raised the blower up. And she started blowing me in the face with the blower.
She was trying to give you a blowjob.
The lever, I guess so, scurvy wench.
Oh, that wild and crazy Mia Duquette. If it was.
I'm not that kind of girl. I like men, not women, but trying to blow me. Yeah, she's trying to blow me down.
Indeed, blow me down.
But she blew my hair back. I just wish it was wet and shampooed so I got a blow dryer.
Thank you, Red.
Okay, thank you.
Another directive from the police, and what is that?
The police came, and my husband put me across the street with their little dog. He said, we just got her, and we just got a face, so we got to get her license, so we didn't want her them to take her. But I had to change some sprinklers went off last night, and they had bad drainage, and the drainage went pouring over the wall, and they soaked all our sheets and some of our blankets. So that little ledge wall, I put them out really nice, smoothed out, and I've been going, and I've been changing the
sort of as a drying line.
Trying to dry them, yeah.
Clothesline.
Because they're soaking wet. And I had them nice and neat, and the police came and told us to take them off the wall and get anything on the wall, or we're going to get arrested.
Arrested? I see. It sounds. Well, at least the police are guarding the wall. Are they guarding the people? That's really the question.
Isn't that their job?
Yeah. Thank you. That media slut, Curb Hugger Chris, is getting all the attention. What's the latest, Chris?
I got interviewed by National Public Radio, and they called me, and then got interviewed. They also called me Curtis Cartier from Santa Cruz Weekly.
How much time did NPR give you?
They let me rant. I pretty much pounded them for about 3 minutes or so with the standard rant that we give for Peace Camp 2010, and they let me pretty much complete my thoughts.
You did mention the shelter crisis.
I did.
All right. Been working on that one for a while, folks. Now, what about Curtis Cartier, the infamous Santa Cruz Weekly sometime story writer?
He's doing an article on Peace Camp 2010, but his anchor for his story, what he's going to spin his story around, is Ed. So he had a lot of questions about Ed, and I really couldn't answer him, to be honest with you. I've known
Ed Fry, the attorney.
I've known Ed only about as long as Peace Camp 2010 has been going. So, but I answered his questions, and he had a lot of questions about Peace Camp 2010 in general, so... he spent about 30 minutes here. He questioned the security guard. We had good things to say about us. He's a good kid here, so.
You sound a little hoarse, a little tired. How you doing, man?
I'm all right. I'm holding up. But, they came again last night, arrested one, cited five, so. It's pretty relentless, you know.
I hear they were harassing people during the day, too.
The blower lady came out. She actually assaulted somebody.
Duquette, tall woman.
We didn't get that. We didn't get the physical assault on tape. She came out, first of all, and was very belligerent, said, look, we're going to, I'm coming out here with a blower. I'm going to blow stuff all over your stuff. I'm going to blow in your face. And she looked up at the security guard and said, and if you're still standing here when I get here, I'm going to blow on you, too. And then she went and got the blower.
She insulted the security guard?
Absolutely.
What kind of a woman is that?
Ask him yourself. I think he's fairly open to interviews if you approach him right. But in any case, so she did come out. I warned the security guard that there was a situation. He said to keep an eye on it. I grabbed the camera and the phone, and sure enough, NPR called, National Public Radio called, and that was when I was giving the interview across the street when she was blowing people in the face. We got 2 good photographs of her blowing the little dog so hard that he literally rolled like a little ball across the fucking sidewalk. And that's about all we got out of that particular incident. And
Mia Duquette, if it's the woman we're talking about,
yeah, that's her. You pointed her out to me yesterday. She's, you know, we had a problem with Blower Guy over at the county building. This is Blower Demoness from Hell, man. I mean, I want my Blower Guy back. I'd take five of him compared to one of her, man. But when she just fucking, at least Blower Guy made some attempt to, like, act civil. She just came right out and told us, well, I'm going to come fuck your whole movie up. And
I don't think she advised you of her intentions.
Yeah.
In
a very honest terms, yeah.
We have been talking with?
Kerbugger Chris.
Thanks, Chris. A yuppie assault as well, you say?
Yeah, well, I don't know, you know, yellers and screamers, and we got one guy on tape, the other guy we didn't. One guy came by, and he's yelling something like, you know, I saw an argument ensuing with these people over here, so I grabbed the tape. I didn't hear the first part of it, but the part I got on tape was, he was basically sarcastically inviting the campers to come camp on his lawn and see what he does to them. And that sort of stick. But,
was he in a car? Or?
He was in a vehicle, yeah. We got him taken off in it. And then the second guy was a walker. He just walked by and said, you fucking trolls, you're a public nuisance. You might as well put it right out in everybody's face. He goes, why don't you trolls go camp in the woods, man? And then he walked off. I didn't get him on tape. But.
Why don't you bigots move to... Yeah, I don't know where.
And then between that, the blower lady, and then the cops that you just described coming, we had you could say we had a pretty rough morning here. I mean, it was one harassment after another, basically about every 15 minutes for a while. So.
Get some rest, big guy.
Yeah, you got it.
Vamp, you say you saw the original origins of this.
Yeah.
Come to my lawn, and you'll see what happens, guy.
Yeah, I was sitting right there. He gave us his address. And at first, everybody was thinking he was actually, you know, I mean, somebody that was supportive of the cause, and he came up and. He goes, well, here's my address. If any of you guys want to come camp on my lawn. And
I kind of doubt it's really his address. But
then the homegirl, no, it's his address.
How do we know?
We've already checked.
Really?
Yes.
What's the guy's name?
He didn't give us his name. It's what it is he lives in a gated community. But that is the address of the gated community.
Right, but it may be the gated community where, let's say, one of the local politicians lives who he wants to send you to.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know that it's his address. But anyway, what happened then?
He comes, and one of the homegirls is writing down his information, thinking that he was being nice about it. And he goes, yeah, I wish you guys would come and try and stay on my land and see what will happen to you. And he openly threatened us.
With what?
He just pretty much openly threatened that there would be physical
violence.
Yes. Done. And, I mean, that's just... Why are you going to come up? We didn't say nothing to him. He came up and openly started this. If there is any animosity brought against him, it's because of the way that he was towards us.
Fair enough. We've been talking with...
Vamp.
Thank you, Vamp. Anything else you wish to say?
Nah.
Thanks.
First of anger, and the...
I got to get back to the... that was... Some tape from August 12th, 2011. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. And there is a lot of tape that I wasn't able to play, and a lot of it, I think, is important stuff. So I'm going to keep trying to do that. We've got about 25 minutes left in the show. If you want to call in, you can, 427-3772. And I think we're going to try a little more of these olden times. It may require a bit of setting up, so I'm going to have to do that now. Again, I want to remind you there is some hot vegan food available. Joe Schultz is serving it out at the, or was serving it, or told me he was going to be serving it at. In front of City Hall, right across from the main library. And this is being done in solidarity with Food Not Bombs in Orlando, Florida, which is being threatened with, it's facing arrest. And so let's hear some more from Peace Camp 2010, way back in... That actually was... I thought it was August 11th, but... It could have been September. Boy, I get my dates straight. But in any case, we're talking about a period of time when Peace Camp, I think it was August. here's more of the of that era, and this actually may be a month later, but I think these interviews are worth airing. I'm going to air some more of them, and if you have any thoughts, please do call in 427-3772. If you want to be a support Orlando Food Not Bombs, support the homeless people of Santa Cruz fighting against the anti-homeless laws here, support those who are standing up for those who are facing conviction. Linda LaMaster is, for instance. I see I have an incoming call here. Hang on just a second. I will pick up that call. So we have a call. Let's see if we can get this person on the air. Hi, you're on free radio. Hello?
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 Is this Mr. Norris?
Yes, this is the very same Norris. And who, shall I say, is calling?
Casey?
Hey, Casey, aren't you one of those notorious protesters at City Hall we've heard so much about?
Perhaps.
Well, I've just been announcing that there is hot food for the vegan-loving types at City Hall. Is that true?
There is. There's salad, there's a meal provided by Joel Schultz and from India Joe's, and soup made from me and my friends. So,
So that the food is available even as we speak at 809 Center Street, right across from the main library. What are you doing there tonight? What's the point? I've been announcing my understanding of what the protest is about, but you're actually there on the ground. What's going on?
We're protecting our First Amendment rights. The city is saying that we can't give out food. Orlando is saying that we can't give out food to people who need it, especially in this failing economy. And they're arresting freaking Keith McHenry, co-founder of Food Not Bombs. And the city is essentially saying we have control over whether the time, place, and manner of your every protest you have. Linda LaMaster is going to going to court in a month or two over this same issue. And frankly, I think we have the right to be here. We have the right to give out food and to people who need it and want it. And
in Santa Cruz, there's no police policy at the moment at going after people who are giving out free food. Although they have driven the drum circle away from the area where food servers could conveniently serve food to people, at first at the farmers market parking lot, and then at the other parking lots from which they were driven away. Finally, the area next to the Soquel Avenue Bridge was declared impassable and a no-go zone. Now, of course, the drum circle on Wednesday has gone up the levee to an area where it's hard for people to get food up there. But there is no actual policy in Santa Cruz, as there is in Orlando, Florida, of not allowing food servers to serve more than two times a year in any park that's within 2 miles of City Hall. I believe that's what the law is. So why are you at City Hall doing this? And, aren't things hunky-dory in Santa Cruz?
Not so much. We can see it not just in Santa Cruz, but rising more in Berkeley as well, the criminalization of poverty in general.
Well, how is poverty criminalized in Santa Cruz? I see plenty of poor people downtown, panhandling, hanging out, selling their huckster jewelry, playing bad music. What are you talking about?
Well, the city isn't criminalizing homelessness. They're not criminalizing poverty. They're criminalizing the acts of poverty, the things that low-income persons do, and someone who's wealthy isn't going to go sleep under the bridge, even though that is illegal in Santa Cruz. There's many people in this city that have to do that, but a lot of people think it's more of a individual problem and not a societal problem that they're in that situation because they made that so. And I don't think that's the case. I think that may be part of the case. I think that the city is also neglecting their inhabitants and sort of looking more towards aesthetics. So,
well, what,
So I'm at.
What's happening now at City Hall? I mean, I understand you work with HUF, the homeless organization, right?
Yeah.
And
I do.
I know you've been researching the shelter situation. I mean, there are shelters people can go to, right?
I mean, from what I've found out is that they have emergency shelters for disabled persons that they keep open just in case.
How many spaces?
Just a few, I guess. But besides the point, there is a problem of homelessness in Santa Cruz, and the city isn't doing anything to solve it.
It's hired more police officers and security guards downtown. Hasn't that helped?
It helps to intimidate. I don't think it actually helps the people. Might help business a little more. I'm not sure, but that's besides the point. Funeral bombs. The whole premise behind it is the saving of the waste of food. You know, saving going to grocery stores and getting people to donate food towards your cause, and you donate that. Funeral bombs donates that towards local charities, and they use that, and you take a portion out to give out your meals, and that's the whole idea behind it.
Is there actually a Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs these days? I haven't seen them around much, if there is.
I've looked online and everything, and I could not find anywhere that of my knowledge that there was a existing Food Not Bombs in Santa Cruz.
Well, perhaps you are Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs, Casey, because you are out there in solidarity with the Orlando Food Not Bombs throughout, you know, in 3,000 miles away.
Well, today is our first day out, and we are, I guess I am attempting to get more people involved and aware about these issues and at the same time help some people out.
How many people have showed up at this food serving? Is anybody you know coming, or is the lone Casey up there?
No, there's like 10 people out here, 15.
Wow. And did Joe Schultz himself show up in his chef's hat to serve soup?
No, he was very busy back at India Joe's, but it's all right. But he did provide some water and some delicious food, so. We're out here in front of City Hall giving that out to people who want it. So
now Keith McHenry, who was in jail, before he was in jail, there was the entire Food Not Bombs had a national conclave in, I guess it was in Orlando or thereabouts, and they decided to call for on the 30th of every month and the 1st of every month a feeding in the evening, a sleep out at night, and then a feeding in the morning. Are you guys going to stay overnight at City Hall? Do you know what people plan to do? I know it would be difficult in Santa Cruz because it's illegal to be on the City Hall grounds after 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah. I think City Hall should be public property, and the city just declaring it having a office hours and it being closed during those beyond those times is, you know, ridiculous. And we're going to continue doing what we're doing and give out some food and sleep, because both of those are our right, and we should be able to do that. And I don't think this city should mind in any case.
Any media coverage? Is the Sentinel there, New York Times, Al Jazeera, anybody show up?
Not as of yet. But we do still have some setting up to do, so I'm going to get back to that.
Well, I will let you get back to your food serving, you food terrorist, you.
That's what Joe Schultz called me.
Indeed. Oh, all right. Just don't be a terrible terrorist. Make sure you're a tasty terrorist.
I'm usually pretty kind to people.
Very good. Very good.
But Anyway, so I'll see you guys. See you later.
I will. I'll be joining you probably in about 20 minutes.
Sounds good. Talk to
you later. Bye-bye. And indeed, apparently food is being served, and there's more people there than I had gloomily predicted. Excellent. Glad to hear it. Go over to City Hall and you know, ladle yourself up or get ladled a bowl of soup and whatever else they got there, and raise it in solidarity with other people elsewhere in the country that are serving people and risking arrest, and other people here in Santa Cruz who are risking arrest each night by falling asleep somewhere on public property, of which there are 1,000 to 2,000 people in Santa Cruz who have to do that every night. So, let's hear some more from a year ago when people in larger numbers were protesting this unjust situation.
Roughly September 2010, about
11. Birthday scam
2010, and having mislaid another tape recorder, which hopefully will reappear one place or another. I'm here on the sidewalk in front of City Hall, standing beside Santa Cruz Police Department car 28, as well as Lee, Gary, and Linda, who are chatting about the new ordinance being proposed for sleeping ban modifications or camping ordinance modifications at the Tuesday 3 p.m. City Council meeting. Ed Fry's vehicle with the porta potty is parked here. Gary's bedding is laid out on the sidewalk. And then somebody else has laid out a ground cloth on the City Hall brick area, which has been declared a trespass zone. Then up here by the Ed Fry's truck, we have another two sleepers who are laid out and trying to get a little slumber. And across the street, in another forbidden zone, the area recently declared a no trespassing after 9 o'clock zone, we have, looks like another, is it two sleepers or is it two piles of bedding? It's not entirely clear. Let me go a little closer. Yes, it's a sleeping man and his pooch, or laid out slumbering. Behind him is some toilet paper and other camping implements. And the police car is running its motor, wasting taxpayer dollars with gasoline. There's some being used, even though it's not clear why he wants to run his motor. Maybe he just likes to hear the chugga-chugga-chugga sound, or wants to be ready to dash off. There's a couple of signs here. Any law against sleep is unjust, says the new sign. Why is sleep illegal? It's written along the edge of the sign. Why brains need REM and less cycles to live. See what else this sign says. 6.36010A1, 6.6010A10B, 6.36010C, and A3. Again, these are the code section numbers of the laws under which people have been cited. 13.04.11C, which is the closed areas of City Hall and the library. Sleep deprivation is torture. And one of our activists is trying to chat with a police officer.
That's got to suck. That's got to be the worst part about it, if there was some big
friendly chat between a police driver and one of the locals who sleeps here at night.
Oh, they're in the dirt.
That's illegal. I'm sorry, sir. You're not supposed to do that. Sleeping in Santa Cruz after 11 is illegal, as any fool knows.
And?
Peace Camp 2010. Here's another sign, another nice-looking sign. A large Peace Camp 2010 lettering, and then smaller lettering, Santa Cruz, California, USA, July 4th to when? That's when the sleeping ordinance began. Now the officer is beginning to shine his spotlight around to keep an eye on the potential criminals. He's checking things out. Give sleep a chance, says the small lettering on the edge of the sign. A snore heard round the world, declares the sign. All we are saying is, and there's even smaller language that I can't even read that's on this sign. So there's a number of nicely lettered signs.
Spotlight is infrared built into it.
I don't know.
is a bold individual who's trespassing and about to sleep, violating two ordinances, perhaps, and perhaps munching as well on the city hall grounds. We'll see what our
erstwhile crime to.
Eating is life-sustaining behavior. A little discussion here about the implications of the proposed ordinance change, and one of our main discussants is leaving, but or maybe just taking a walk. The new provision, of the law, allows you to have a ticket dismissed if you bring evidence that on the date of the ticket, the sleeping ticket, that you you were on a waiting list at the Homeless Service Center, the River Street Shelter. The question that arose, and Linda LeMaster seemed to feel that you needed to have a social security number and perhaps some other documentation. I was suggesting we needed to verify exactly what's required before the Tuesday 3 o'clock session to be sure, to get the latest updated information. Linda may well be completely right, but I think it still needs to be verified. You pointed out, Gary, that the verification could be difficult for people who, A, are illegal immigrants, B, had their property or their identification confiscated or stolen, if you will, by the police department, or C, for one reason or another, have lost their material, had it stolen by someone else.
Well, I was just thinking about B, but yeah, sure. I'm sure any number of situations could apply where people have a problem getting on the list or wanting to be on that list. I mean, there's identity theft, which is a pretty serious problem, and who can say that that particular 501c corporation is sloppy with their records or not?
And that's Gary Johnson, who up until recently was in jail with Ed Fry, sentenced to 6 months in jail for essentially political protesting, in which sleeping was a part of that political protest on public property. He was convicted of illegal lodging. And with regard to the particular issue Gary and I are talking about, the new change in the sleeping ban that allows you to have tickets automatically dismissed by the city attorney if you are on a waiting list at the night of the citation, and the concerns that people may have to present more documentation to get on the list. Though originally people from Peace Camp 2010 had a lot of trouble getting their tickets dismissed and getting on waiting lists, although this law really didn't go into effect until Peace Camp 2010 was almost over. It was passed in September and went into effect in late October of that year. The main problem now seems to be that in spite of Letitia Schwartz's claims, she's the kind of the Homeless Service Center, one of the honchos there, along with Monica Martinez, her claim that all people who are on the waiting list, their names are immediately forwarded to the city attorney's office. Steve Plaich, an activist who's been following this issue closely and has a homeless legal assistance project every Monday out at the Red Church, Calvary Episcopal Church across from Nickelodeon and the Farmers Market, he claims that he has learned from city attorney's office that the Homeless Service Center is not forwarding the names with any kind of regularity or frequency, and therefore this process has sort of broken down, or at least it had as of several weeks ago. So the original concerns of the activists that people would be given high standards or ID required doesn't seem to be the problem. More the problem seems to be that the Homeless Service Center is not forwarding the information to the city attorney's office. And also, I've learned at the last meeting of the Homeless Services Center Community Group, which was last Friday, I believe, when I and the activist KC, who you just heard on the phone with me, he and I were listening to the revelation by Dan Daniel of the Homeless Service Center that there is no longer will they give out letters asserting that the Homeless Service Center was full on any particular night, even though and if it was, so that information could be taken to court to have a ticket dismissed by the courts. Rather, they're kind of feathering their own nest, requiring you to have been on a waiting list, have entered their system. I don't know whether it's because they want more funding or because they want more organized surveillance of homeless people, or because they want a more orderly process,
or I'm not quite sure. Their motivation is unclear, but it is clear that they're making the ridiculous decision not to issue the simple letter that will help to dismiss the tickets for those who did not know that there were waiting lists or they should be on a waiting list, who don't like lying about, I'm going to be going into these difficult and uncomfortable shelter situations that only last for a month anyway and are highly regulated by what appear to be control freak people. At least that's some of the concerns that have come up recently at the Huff meetings. The basic reality is if there's no legal place in Santa Cruz to sleep, you can't arrest someone for sleeping at night constitutionally because that's a need people have. And the idea that you can is to criminalize homelessness. And that, of course, is what we're protesting tonight at City Hall. And people are serving free food there, and they are, some of them, I guess, are intending to sleep overnight. So that's what's coming up. Back to this September tape. I guess the actual date of the tape was September 12th, 2010. And it's a month after the earlier tape that you heard me play. And we've only got about 4 minutes left, but I will be coming back with more on Sunday, I imagine, assuming I don't flee the town, as I do with increasing frequency, but we'll see. Coming up next is Uncle Dennis's From the Cream to the Dregs. He should be coming into the studio shortly. I'll be playing this tape until he sets up. And I can also be reached at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's the line for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Give me a call if you have questions, you want to volunteer to help, you have sleeping tickets you want to deal with, and also chat with you about whatever's on your mind. So, here's some more, and I'll talk to you again on Sunday or possibly tonight at the demonstration in front of City Hall. Come on down.
There are requirements for being on the list or not being on the list. They may not allow certain people to be on that list. There may be, for example, people excluded from the waiting list because of behavioral problems, because of alcoholic or drug conditions, because of criminal behavior, because of rule violations. There could have been all kinds of reasons why they're excluding particular people. In other words, I think it's important to determine what are the specific restrictions. If those restrictions apply, then it does not serve as an open-ended release valve that will allow people to get their tickets dismissed. Of course, this all begs the question of why you would even require people, given the acknowledged shelter emergency and shelter shortage, that's hard to say, that why you would even, being on a waiting list is not equivalent to having a shelter bed. And the idea that if you're on a waiting list, that somehow meets the condition for OC, we're not going to, you know, that's not the same thing as having a shelter bed. But I guess if you're having your ticket dismissed, well.
To me it sounds like they want to outsource a no-bid contract to a third party that's going to make money off this list.
Well, they're not terribly generous with the Homeless Service Center. I mean, they are giving $4.1 million to a desal plant. Scott Camp Dresser and McKee, the group that is accused of being war profiteers in Iraq. However, they only get...
I'm going to interrupt this tape because I have a live contact with Steve Plaich of the Homeless Legal Assistance Project. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Robert, how are you?
I'm good. So what do you got? Has the city attorney's office actually getting reports regularly now from the Homeless Service Center about those on waiting lists so tickets can be dismissed?
As near as I can tell, they're kind of resuming that program. I've been over to the Homeless Service Center a couple times this week, kind of talking to people basically in conjunction with the Homeless Persons Legal Assistance Program, which is going pretty well. I've got some participants from the Reveille Family Shelter, so that has been going as well as can be expected.
Anything coming up this week that we should know about as far as meetings, I don't know, tyrannical overthrows?
The Sunday night I was on Voices from the Village with Lou the Fortune, Tomas Alejo of the SCORE and the Immigration Action Group. A young woman named Phoenix, and I can't remember her last name, from an action group at Cabrillo, and Jen Laskin, from the ACLU. We did a roundtable on SCOM, so that was interesting. Your viewers, our listeners, can probably archive that or look for it when it's rebroadcast.
And SCOM, of course, is the policy that they will deport you for minor infractions unless we opt out of that, and we can't opt out because it's currently
unless we can convince the Board of Supervisors to restrict the Sheriff's Department's budget so that they will be effectively hamstrung in enforcing that policy. So we're working on that. I had a budget meeting, of course, on Tuesday night at the council. I was there primarily to represent for Michael Posner and make sure that his bike projects were in the capital improvement budget, which they were. Last night we had two meetings for the Festival del Nopal, as you know, with Tony Madrigal. I'm involved in that. And then we're just moving along on different fronts and whatnot. You know, Gary is out of jail. Red is out of jail. I saw Ed Monday night, and actually he was at council meeting on Tuesday as well.
Have you been to the protest, which is happening now at City Hall?
I did not. I just saw that online, and I'm kind of otherwise engaged here. I saw that Becky had posted something on that. So
fair enough. I may be down there myself, and I'll talk to you later because my time is up.
Okay, always good to talk to you and your listeners.
Thank you, Steve.
All right.
Bye-bye. I turn the mic now over to the distinguished and distinguishable Uncle Dennis.
And good evening, free radio listeners, far and wide, near and far. As Robert prepares to depart the station, only to reappear on your airwaves on Sunday morning, whether do you know anything about Thomas?
Thomas Levitt?
Yes, Mr. Levitt.
The wake-up call. He told me the check was in the mail.
Check was in the mail. Okay.
I think Thomas, okay. Of course, is...
Well, then, on Sunday morning at 9:30, following the wake-up show, which may or may not still be on the air,
maybe.
Robert will be returning to the studio with some more of his... whatever he does, you know, his interviews and telephone calls and whatever. Anyway, I'm Uncle Dennis. This show is called From the Cream to the Dregs. And tonight, you're going to hear a special show from the archives of From the Cream to the Dregs. This one's called The Boys Show. First aired 4 years ago. And it stars some young men who have since graduated from high school, which they were in when they did this show, and have graduated from college. So here they are in a reprise edition of From the Cream to the Dregs. I will be out of the area for the next 2 weeks, and in my place will be the venerable host of the Our Duck Show. So he will be doing Thursdays at 8 and Fridays at 9. So stay tuned for all of that. I will return in mid-July to once again take over this spot of the airwaves. But until then, here's The Boys Show.